Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, it's good to be back doing the live show. Thank you all for watching. This is a show I try to do every week on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Today is a Wednesday, but here on out, I should be here on Tuesdays more. So hopefully there's more shows coming up. I do it live on YouTube. It's meant to be a YouTube live show. If you're listening to this as a podcast, I apologize. You're going to miss a lot of value, but I don't know. Maybe listening to it's good enough. There's a lot of questions today, so I'm just going to get right into it. The first thing I want to do before I get to questions is talk about this knife that somebody suggested to me on the last show. And I get a lot of people tell me, try this knife, try that knife, because I've recommended a lot of knives. And just for all of you that don't know, I'm a huge fan of the Gerber Easy At Risky knife. I have it right here. I also like a lot of Spyderco knives. The Spyderco knives are, I think, better, but this is just a solid knife. And I think it's like, I don't know, $50, something like this. And in the last show, somebody suggested I try this knife that's on Amazon, the Maxim Saltwater Lockback Knife. So I have it here unopened. I'm going to try it out. I'm going to pull it out and just tell you my quick thoughts on it. I think it was like, what is it, like $20? Let's look. Oops. Let me show up. It's $24.48. So that's a pretty sweet deal for a knife. And I have it right here. I'll open it for y'all. And, you know, it's about the same size. My first impressions, just really quick, is it feels a little chintzy, and it is. It doesn't open as clean as the Gerber. It opens with one hand. It's just the action just sticks a little bit more. But I do like the blade. This is a nice serrated edge, if you can see here. You know, way better than an NRS or a lot of like the silly dive knives that people use. I can just tell it cuts rope. Let me pull some rope back real quick. And just to show, like, see if it can cut rope. Yeah, that's pretty much one cut. If I use the Gerber, I can already tell you the action on this, the way that it opens with one hand is easier. This knife, the Gerber cuts a little bit better. I can already tell. Let me try it one more time. It cut pretty well. I'd say my general impression is the Gerber is maybe like, I don't know, 10% better, but still a good knife for $24. It's a little heavier too than the Gerber. For $24, if you're going to, a great replacement. If you have an NRS knife and you want to get rid of it because you maybe think it's not very good, then this might be a good, cheap alternative. Although if it was me, I'd go with the Gerber. I think it's for the value, this is the way to go. But whoever recommended the Maxim, thanks for recommending it. I'm going to put it in my box of knives that I pull out in classes for people to test. And it's a solid contender. It's for the price, it's not bad. So let's get the questions. First of all, if you have a question and want to answer, just put in the comments. Here's one right here. When you have a deadhead trip and fly guests in, who pays for that? And so the question is, on the middle fork of the salmon, it's low water now. And so what we do as guides is we go to Boundary Creek and float the boats down to Indian Creek. We call that a deadhead. And so this is pretty specific to the middle fork of the salmon. And when we do a deadhead trip and fly guests in, my company, Northwest Drafting Company, we pay for the flights of our guests. So we absorb that cost. Other outfitters charge the guests extra. And so it depends who you're going with. For us, it's included in the price. If we do it, no extra charge. Some outfitters, they'll say, thanks for paying for the trip. We're flying you in. Now give us another $150 because we have to fly you in. And that's a question worth asking the outfitter. I know I'd say most outfitters probably charge extra for it. Yeah. And then yeah, I guess the outfitter, are there insurance policies for that? I have no idea. I don't know. Call an insurance company. Another question, Sean asks, do you get one night to make it to Indian when you deadhead? Yeah, there's three types of deadheads. There's two that will apply to this question. There's a one-day deadhead where you do it all in one day. And that's what we did. I mean, when I guided in the 2000s, we always did those. Now they allow you to camp above Big Bend one night. And so that's called an overnight deadhead. There's also a two-day deadhead, which is a separate thing to get to Thomas Creek. But for getting to Indian Creek, there's the one-day deadhead, you leave before 9, or the two-day deadhead, where you leave after 5 p.m. the night before, and you can camp that night. You have to get in, you have to get a camp. You have to talk to the people at the Forest Service. But you can do it as an overnight version. Again, you can't leave. You probably won't leave until like 7-8 p.m. You'll go like an hour. So you're not, maybe you're making like 4 miles. We usually go to Gardell's, which I think is like mile 3 or 4. But yeah. All right, let's get on to the questions I have on the docket here. Thank you all for submitting. There's a lot of questions this week, and I'm going to do my best to get through them all. Here we go. Used boat shopping. I've been a huge fan of your channel recently once I found it. Thank you. Thanks for finding it. Thanks for being a fan. Been boating for a little while now, but just getting into rafting with my wife. Would you mind sharing some resources for finding used rafts, cataracts, and maybe how to best price them when listing or buying? I don't know. Honestly, I'm sorry I can't answer this. I don't buy used boats for a number of reasons, but my just guess if I was going to buy a used boat would be Facebook Marketplace. There's a lot on Craigslist. I know Mountain Buzz has a section, but I'm probably the wrong person to ask, honestly. I don't buy used boats, so I don't have a good answer for you. Okay, here's another question. Came in from Chris Davis. How has the air quality been around Cash Bar? Is the smoke bad? Headed out for a Maine salmon next week. Last time I was there, it was totally clear. But I heard on the news the smoke is shifting more towards Idaho. So it could be awful. I think there's not a lot of fire. There's some fires in the region of Cash Bar. There's some fires near salmon. But I think the amount of smoke you'll get on a Middle Fork Maine trip or anywhere around there is super dependent on smoke coming from Oregon fires. And so it's kind of a crapshoot. And we had smoke. I did a trip a week ago. We had smoke the first 2 days. The smoke the first day affected our flights in. It delayed them. But then it rained and the smoke went away. So, yeah. More questions. Are deadheads on Middle Fork salmon only for commercial companies, or can privates do it? Yeah, privates can do it too. The commercial companies, we have extra rules we have to follow. But yeah, privates can do it too. Yep. The key thing is to know is it's one boat per person. So you can't fly all your, you can't like have this, everybody come in on the deadhead. The deadhead's allowed is, the deadhead is set up so the boats can get down to safe flights. So if you can't bring your whole group, so people have to fly in if there's more than one boat per person. But for every raft you have, a person can go in. Okay, next question here. Hi, Zach. I was curious how you handle quickly disconnecting a rope from a raft after pulling it off a raft. The scenario being that the boat starts downriver and the carabiner can't easily be unclipped because it has some load on it, and you can't just swing to shore because some feature in the way. Would you just cut the anchor webbing? I mean, this is hard to answer because I'm guessing you had the situation happen, and every situation is different. I don't think I've ever cut an anchor web. I've been on a lot of rafts, like a lot. I mean, just to guess, like 30. I don't think I've ever cut the anchor webbing. So I don't think based on my experience and the times I haven't needed to. But if you cut the anchor webbing, I think that isn't I'm guessing some people have like, you can't do that. It's unsafe. You're all going to die. Like some rescue instructor is going to be like, you can't ever cut the webbing. I don't know. Let's do it thoughtfully. Nobody's going to get hurt. I mean, there's a lot of tension there. So when you cut it, like some weird stuff might happen. So I would make sure that nobody gets hurt, but cutting webbing's cheap. You know, you can replace webbing. So as long as it's a safe thing to do, or at least responsible thing to do, you thought it through. Like if you cut it is like something in a bind and hurt somebody, I'm not opposed to it, but usually you don't need to. Usually you can undo a knot, you can move the prussic, something can happen. Yep. Okay, so Sean's saying the AQI in salmon's 46. Yeah, I mean, there's not gonna be AQI is a guess. There's not AQI everywhere. I mean, there's a thing to measure it is in salmon, but I mean, honestly, like
is it going to affect whether you go or not? If somebody has asthma or like, just go. I mean, whether it's smoky or not, like if it's, it could be perfectly sunny at Cash Bar. And when you launch on day two, it could be just terrible. So if you have an aversion to smoke for health reasons, just don't go. If you don't, and you don't, the smoke doesn't affect you, then go. But like, there are fires in the West. It could be really smoky out there because winds can shift, and you kind of need to be ready for that. Although I honestly, it's been great out there. I hardly noticed the smoke. It's pretty nice out there. Sean, I got pulled off a flat wrap on Kybers, had to finish a class 4 wrap with a lot of feet of rope dangling from raft. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but rope is dangerous. Let's just leave it at that. Okay, next question. We got to keep moving. So to quickly answer this, yeah, I guess I'd cut the webbing, but it's never really been a problem. Okay, private access to public rivers. I ran the tee last week and we planted 180 trees. Oh, that's cool. Where'd you plant trees? That's interesting. Like in the canyon? With Tuolumne River Trust in FOR. Huh. I didn't know the trees needed to be planted there. That's cool. Anyway, but that's the only way. Great trip, but that's the only way I can run the tee due to road issues. However, companies are allowed on a South Fork Road. How is this fair? I pay taxes. It's everyone's resource. It's a one-lane road, but it can be up for even hours, down odd hours, etc. Okay, now we got the Americans we're going to talk about separately. So as I understand it, those roads are on private. So like it's your topic, private access to public rivers. So private landowners can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter that it's fair or not. The outfitters have come to an agreement with, I'm just guessing, I don't know. I kind of know what's going on here, but I don't 100% know. So I wish somebody may fix this, but like, I'm going to give you my general thinking. As outfitters, we may go to a private landowner and say, hey, we'd like to have access. We promise you we will behave and we will drive the adequate vehicles that can get up and down the road and we won't cause you hassles. And if we do cause you hassles, you know how to find us, right? Where if you let private boaters down that road, they might start taking Subarus down that aren't adequate. They might get stuck. That really messes it up for everybody. And then if a private boater does mess up, you can't go, who do you get in trouble? Like if a commercial company messes it up like one time, they just say, you're done driving down that road. We gave you a chance, you messed up, you're done. If one private boater messes up, I guess you could say no more private boaters down the road, but there's no responsible party. So maybe it's not fair, but I don't know. Life's not fair. It's just, I don't know. It's, you know, I from what I understand though, is that I don't know who owns the road. Somebody. I don't think it's Forest Service. Maybe it is. If it's Forest Service, then there's some, if it's public lands, then there should be more equality. But if it's private, it's private. But from what I understand, one of the commercial companies, you can pay them to shuttle your gear down. Like one of the commercial companies has an agreement with the landowner or whoever controls the road to shuttle stuff down. Like I was on a Tuolumne trip last August and private boaters were driven down by a commercial company. Now you need to pay the commercial company money to do this, but that way the landowner, if that commercial company makes a mistake, the landowners can like come after them and be like, hey, you made a mistake, you're done, or charge them money or whatever. So if it's private land, I mean, I don't know. It's not fair. And that's just how it is. If you want to launch on the Tuolumne, there is access up at Cherry Creek. So just launch at Cherry Creek. You know, there is access there. Or you can hike in. You know, just go minimal and hike in and do a ducky trip. Similar issues on American Gorge with easier takeout for companies. Middle American was commercial only put in last year. I didn't know about that. Frustrating and unfair for privates. Yeah, I mean, it's private land. So the commercial companies are probably paying for the access. And I would guess in as a whole, commercial companies are more respectful to the landowners. Like I'm sure that if you're a private boater, you're probably really respectful of the access that's given to you. But there are so many people out there who are not. And I see this all the time. And so as a commercial company, we have to be respectful because our name's on the truck And, you know, if we make a mistake, people come after us, whether it's our permit or whatever, where, you know, just some dummy does something they shouldn't be doing, it kind of ruins it for everybody. So with public lands, we're supposed to allow equitable access and allow for dummies to do dumb things. Public lands, for private lands, the private landowner can make the decision, and they've made a decision, it looks like. I'm surprised Middle American was commercial only put in last year. That's crazy. I don't expect that. I thought that put in was, was public, but I don't know. I haven't been in the American in so long. I don't understand. Okay. Well, lots of comments, questions. Okay. I'm doing the lock saw soon for the first time. What are your quick tips for low technical water? It depends. Are you kayaking? Are you rafting? Are you ducking? Are you paddle boating? I mean, my general thoughts for low technical water, my general thoughts, which may or may not apply, let some air out of your tubes, let some air out of your floors. Spin to windpick up on a rock. Just go with the spin till you pull off. Keep your stuff light. Bigger boats are not necessarily worse. People think they want a small boat, but like you actually want less boat in the water. So like bigger boats generally do pretty well. Cataracts sometimes struggle. Yeah. If anybody else has quick tips, that'd be great to have them. I should have attached to my raft. I'm not sure what that means. Did you hear about the landslide on the Chilcotin River in Canada? Yes. There's somebody has a question about that. I think at the end of this, and I think I have video ready to watch. We'll talk about it later. That's pretty interesting, but I have a bazillion questions to get back to. Planted in the riparian zone. That's cool. Clavy left. Huh. That's cool. I didn't know they needed more trees there, but that's great. I understand that's a public road with a locked Forest Service gate. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who owns the road, who has access to it. But honestly, like I know that the South Fork Road is no joke. And the first time I ever did the Tuolumne, I parked at the top and jogged down that road for shuttle. Because it's a steep road and it's steeper than Lumsden. Yeah. There's not a lot of room for error. And it just takes one dummy driving down there with a trailer or a Subaru or whatever to ruin it for everybody. And it's unfortunately, there's a lot of dummies out there. So, I mean, I think the Forest Service, I can see their decision. It may not be fair. If it is a Forest Service road, it may not be fair, but like they want to allow people to run the river. And they also get fees from commercial companies, which help their budgets and help do things to protect the river and pays for river patrol. So because the commercial companies, we pay like a good amount of fees, they want to help the commercial companies, and the commercial companies go to the meetings and have these conversations. If there was a private boater organization, I don't know in California, if there is one like California Boaters Club or Coalition or whatever, they could sit down at the table and also negotiate for private boater use. But it requires like we have outfitting organizations to do this. You need a private boating organization to sit down at the table. That organization also need to communicate to everybody, like, don't be a dummy. Here are the rules. Like all the guides who drive that road know the rules because they have to follow the rules or they won't get access. As soon as you open up for just general private boaters who don't know the rules, who knows what's going to happen. So I'm sorry if I sound like a outfitter here, but I am one. And I see how things get ruined for everybody by a few dumb people. And sometimes it's commercial guides. Commercial guides do dumb things too that ruin it for the rest of us. But when a commercial guide does something dumb, there's a penalty to that company. When private boaters do something dumb, and then if everybody, there's no penalty for them. Okay. Craig, with fires at Tyatin and Trout Lake, any other recommendations for late season trips in Oregon and Washington? I don't know. The Deschutes. Maybe it'll rain. Maybe the hood will come up. So the white salmon, does the Trout Lake fire affect? I mean, you can paddle the white salmon. I'm going to try to paddle there tomorrow. And who knows? Maybe the fires will get better. I have no idea. But fall paddling is rough. Once September hits, to me, it's like middle white salmon, maybe the Deschutes is going and just wait for it to rain. Okay, back to questions. Okay. So my quick answer is life's not fair. I don't know. If you care, like, go talk to the Forest Service or whoever, figure out who owns the land, talk to them and understand their side of things. Okay, Isaac, I had a very clean run at Clavey last week. Maybe a little boring, but feel free to review. Yeah, I have it right here. Okay, let's pull this up. I love Clavey Falls. This is one of my favorite rapids of all time. Let's go to this. All right, so some quick thoughts. This is Clavey Falls. This is Sean. Okay, I love to talk about gear. And so I just want to point out some great things here. First of all, Pins Eclipse. I'm stoked on those Pins Eclipse. Nice job. I feel like you're sitting a little high. That frame bends up. Like I feel like you're sitting a bit high. I don't think I would want to set that high personally. I love the WWTC throwback. That looks like the big dog. I also consider the 15 meter. It just like that's a big bag on your waist, I'm sure. But if you don't mind carrying it, it's a rad one. That 4.6 PFD, like it's a rescue PFD, but has great flotation. Nice job on that. And you know, I'm not a big fan of these Carlisle oars, but you know, you probably have a reason for that. Those are my quick thoughts about gear. And I love the person in the front has a real PFD, like has flotation. If I saw them in a green jacket, I'd be a little bit annoyed. But yeah, this looks awesome. Is this a day trip? Let's see, maybe a day trip. So we're going down on a left ship right now. Our left ship right there. And that's just me. You don't need it, but I would left ship there. There's a couple of balls. I'm talking about Clavey Falls. When you're running it, you have this audience over here. It just adds an extra element to it. People watching it come down. Those people should probably be wearing PFDs. They're standing. Looks like somebody standing in the river, near the river. Not sure why they're on PFD zone. And helmets. Oh, also your helmet. Like that sweet helmet is sick. Like that, just like your PPE is spot on. I love it. Okay. All right, there's that left ship, double ship. That rock to the left is so nasty. And to miss that, it's about the top setup. So like a little bit of point. You entered on the left side of the falls, pointed to the right. So you're going to track to the right and you're going to miss that rock. People go slamming over that rock. Beautiful job using the ship. Nice and calm. Down here, nice and calm here. Hitting the walls, not a big deal. Get over hitting walls and rocks, not a big deal. Nice job pulling. Not just pushing it in. I want to use a combination. Maybe run down the floor. Yeah, nice run. That's cool. I was thinking about trying to go to tea this August, but I think my plans fell through. No problem. Yeah, it's a big problem. This is a legit rapid. It's in the middle for it. This is where Pins Eclipse matter. If you get spinnies here, it's hard to hold on your oars. Nice one. All right. Here we go. My family and I live close to and spend a lot of our time rafting the North Santiam River. In late June, after a full day in the river, my wife and I both became very sick with something we've never experienced before. 2 weeks later, Oregon Health Authority issued a recreational advisory for presence of cyanotoxins above recreational use values for human exposures. As you can imagine, we're extremely hesitant to enter the water again, but are struggling as the water is our happy place. With your experience, do you have any information about this? No, I never heard of this before. It doesn't sound good, though. It appears the Umpqua has become so bad this year that it's killed dogs. Oh, man. I have dogs. I don't want my dogs to die. I will add links below. I don't have the links, unfortunately. But, yeah, that sounds bad. That's a bummer. I wonder where that comes from. Cyanotoxins. Huh. Unfortunately, I have nothing to say other than that's a bummer. All right. Moving on from scary boating experience. Hi, Zach. I've been boating almost 20 years. Guided 6 seasons in Upper Klamath. Upper Klamath is legit. 6 seasons there is pretty legit. In Upper Rogue, have made yearly trip down to Lower Rogue every season. Haven't had any incidents or close calls in a long time. Recently have started doing the mid-shooter at Rainy with good runs. Last week, my partner and I went through. My left oar popped out at the top after shipping forward. What is shipping? Is that shipping forward is like blades forward or hand? So like, to me, shipping, when you turn, when you say the word shipping, shipping is blades forwards, hands back. Anything other than that is not shipping. It's just bad technique. But in the mid-shoot, you should not ship. You should throw your handles forward, which I do not call shipping. That's just throwing your handles forward, right? It's not something we should be doing on a regular basis, but there's a couple places it works, and one of them particularly is the mid-shoot. So when you say after shipping forward, I'm assuming you shipped blade forward because that's the only way to ship. I mean, I believe it causes to get sideways and stuck in the middle. That sucks. My partner, who is not very experienced, was terrified. I acted quickly, hopped down the left bank, and was able to shove off the rock after a few minutes and jump back in and finish out the shoot. After the adrenaline wore off at camp, I had a lot of anxiety about what could have happened and what we still had ahead of us, Blossom. It caused me to not have my least enjoyable trip. I don't understand that. It caused me to not have... It's like a triple negative. I don't understand that. Anyway, all went very smooth the rest of the trip. Okay, cool. How do you coach your guides, or what is your outlook after a close call or scary experience? This just is like a normal experience that happens rafting. You get stuck sideways in a chute. I don't know. If it terrifies you, maybe rafting isn't for you. And rafting is an inherently risky sport. Like, people get hurt, people die. So things go wrong. And you know, getting stuck in the middle of the mid shoot. I mean, if it happened to me, I just be like, yep, that's unpleasant, but it doesn't terrify me. I'm like, there's places that I can get terrified. It's not the mid shoot. There's really big, hard rapids out there, and there's like logs, there's people's ropes dangling everywhere. Getting clipped into a raft on accident terrifies me. Getting stuck in the mid shoot sideways does not terrify me. If it terrifies you, it may be for a good reason, and maybe like you're very risk tolerant. Maybe rafting's not for you. And it sounds like your partner was terrified, which had an effect on you. And my only thing here is like, maybe don't do the rogue, because there are places that you can get hurt and die. Like, it's the reality. Maybe do rivers that are easier than that. Like, maybe the Lower Klamath, maybe class 1, 2. I don't coach our guides, after a close call. We don't do training on that. What if you are scared? How are you going to deal with it? But if a guide calls me and is like, hey, I had this thing happen to me and I was scared, my coaching might be like, was it really scary? What mistake did you make to get in that position? Like, if you're a guide and you're scared, some mistake happened to get you in that spot. Like, trips shouldn't be scary. Or are you just scared of some small thing? And if you are, maybe guiding's not right for you, because you need to exude confidence. You can't just be scared when something goes wrong. You need to have their book is sideways, deal with it, and then be a confident guide afterwards. Like, hey, that's a thing that happened. Mother Nature's not perfect. This isn't Disneyland, but I had the ability to get stuck there. Whereas if you wrapped a Blossom and you were scared, yeah, you made a mistake. Because you shouldn't be wrapping a Blossom. Let's deal with the mistake you made, not the fear you had afterwards. That's my thoughts, at least. It feels like I should have been able to shake this off quickly. Unfortunately, I only get to do 1 to 2 trips a year these days. So maybe it's a lack of experience recently. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. But if you've guided the Upper Klamath, being stuck in a mid-shoot shouldn't be a big deal. It's like, I'm stuck in the mid-shoot. It would not be a fun swim to swim the mid-shoot. But like, it would, you get banged up a little bit, maybe. But I don't think that's a place you could die. And I could be wrong. Maybe you could. Maybe there's a way to, like, nobody, I don't know if anybody's ever died in the mid-shoot. But if you wrapped a Blossom and she swam Blossom and had a terrible experience in a minimal float PFD, that's something to be really scared of, I think. And I hope that helps. I don't have a good answer other than, And as you get older, like, as I get older, I get more nervous out there. So I'm toning down what I do. and I have responsibilities. Like if I, you know, if something happened to me, like I have dogs and a wife and like a people who I employ, it would affect a lot of people's lives. And so I'm more careful than I am than when I was 21 and thought I was, you know, going to live forever. And when you're younger, you're more risk tolerant. I'm less tolerant. Okay. All right. Hopefully I answered that question. Okay. Those are cataract oars. My six Sawyers. Ooh, that hurts. They're stolen. Huh. That's too bad. That sucks. Do you park at, what's up, Billy Bum Bum? Do you park with your blades forward, back, across the boat? I generally have blades forward if there's something for them to sit on. But sometimes, like, if you put them forward, they'll just fall off. So then I might do them back, and sometimes I'll cross them. It depends. If I'm parking and somebody, like, needs to get in my cooler, I'm not going to cross them because they need to get in my cooler. And if there's a boat next to me, I'm not going to cross them either. So it depends. It depends. I would do any of those things. In general, blades forward. My guess, Willie Bum Bum, is you were guiding a trip maybe a week or two ago, and some guy was like, "You gotta always do your blades this way," and you're like, "Why?" And so my guess is this is asking, "Does this matter?" And my quick answer is, it doesn't matter. But I have a preference towards blades forward. And actually, that reminds me, Willie Bum Bum, somebody did tell me on a trip I was guiding that I had told them you have to do blades forward, which I don't think that's the case. I gotta look into this actually. That reminds me, I gotta ask somebody this. It doesn't matter that much, but I think I would blade forward is an aesthetic preference and is generally easier. I'm making a note to look into one reason they might think I want blades forward, but the quick answer is I don't think it matters that much. Okay. The Chilcotin, cool. I busted through. That's great. Try getting pinned on the picket fence, standing on the pin rock for 45 minutes while your team formulates a plan to set you free. Nerve wracking. Yeah. Yeah. But like, it's only nerve wracking. I mean, I think in this case, it's nerve wracking because you messed up and you're wondering when it's going to end. Right. It's nerve wracking. And you're like embarrassed because people are watching you and you messed up and there's people like there's social anxiety, but you're probably like, your safety is probably fine. Like, honestly, you could probably swim to shore and you're going to live. But like, it's the situations where you're going to die that you could have died that could change your whole opinion on boating. And those things are a lot of times self-imposed mistakes. Like your non-locking carabiner clipped you in and the boat flipped, or you got tangled around a rope, some sort of equipment pin, like will freak you out. Willie Bum Bum could probably speak to this. Or, you flipped and came up under the raft, and then you were under there for a while till you got out and had a really long underwater experience, or you got stuck on a tree, or you got pinned in a rock. Like, those are really scary things. Okay. Here we go. Middle Fork Salmon, low water. Yeah, Willie Bum Bum. Did somebody tell you it mattered? Because I feel like I'm hearing that it matters. Yeah, it doesn't matter that much. But I would say blades forward is like just preferable for like aesthetics and stuff. But honestly, it shouldn't matter that much. But I might have, yeah, it might be somewhere that I said that. I'm going to have to look. Okay. I have a simple question for you. At what point do you start flying people in Indian Creek on the Middle Fork Salmon and start to deadhead? And at what level do you stop running from boundary and fly all your gear to Indian? Yeah, we've been talking about Middle Fork low water a lot at the beginning of the show. At 2.2 feet, that's where we start thinking about flying in. And it super depends on the guides and the guests. So like I've run from Boundary Creek with guests at 1.8 before because there was a solar eclipse we wanted to experience above Indian Creek. You can do it. Like you can run from with guests from 1.8 with a good crew and guests that are gung-ho. But you know, if the guests are like at least our guests, if they're like not super active or the guides are tired and struggling, you might do it at 2.2 or 2.1. So this year we ran from the top at 2.1 with guests because we have a great crew and the guests really wanted to run from boundary. So somewhere in that 2.2, 2.2 is where we start thinking about it. below 2-1, you're usually going to do it. Stop running from boundary. And then, I mean, there's no level where we're going to fly all of our gear to Indian. There's levels like the 1-9s, 1-8s, 1-7s, 1-6s, 1-5s. You start flying some stuff in. Like, let's make the boats lighter. Let's fly in food boxes. Let's fly in ice coolers. Let's fly in drinks. Let's fly in charcoal, fire pan, kitchen comm. So you just like, you slowly, as it drops, fly more stuff in depending on how the crew's doing. But I mean, somebody who's really good can get a pretty heavy boat down at 1-7. It can be done. It's exhausting because you're getting out pushing sometimes and getting stuck here and there, but like, it can be done. Okay. Anyway, I see from your most recent video that you were deadheading at 1-8. Yep. Curious what your thoughts are about the decision to fly guests in the Indian Creek versus running them from the top. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the guides, depends on the guests, depends on how much stuff they have. Like, if they all want fancy tents and like they're bringing, you know, thousands of dollars of the booze, it's a lot of stuff to get down. And so that way you might fly it in, or you're like, hey, this group just wants a more mellow trip. They don't want to be having these longer days. So it super depends on a lot of factors. There's not like a quick and easy answer. Maybe you can touch on the deadheading rules as well. From what I've gleaned from a couple of your previous talks about it, you launch at or after 4 p.m. the day before, you permitted launch dates and must get to Indian Creek by the next day. So that's I think totally incorrect, but I think I know what you're saying, that exact rule. So the rules, and if you want the deadhead rules, you should contact the Forest Service. I just want to say that. Like, if you want the rules, I'm going to tell you what's in my brain right now that might be actually slightly wrong. So please don't go to boundary and be like, well, Zach said blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm just trying to remember the rules, and the rules that they're close enough. There's three types of deadheads. One of them is a 2-day deadhead at Thomas Creek, which isn't relevant here. One is a 1-day deadhead where you have to launch the day before your launch date. So you wrote the day before your permitted launch date after 4 p.m. No. It's the day before your permitted launch date. You have to launch before 9 a.m. And that's so that you don't affect trips launching from boundary. Like, a deadhead, the key to deadheads, the most important thing to realize with deadheads is when you're deadheading, you can't affect other people's trips who are launching from boundary. You have to be away from them and not affect them. So you have to launch before 9 a.m. So people launching that day from boundary on their launch date have use of the ramp, have use of the eddy. You're not there like 10:30, just like in their way. And so you can't affect their launch. So launch before 9 a.m. if it's the day before. You can also launch 2 days before in the evening, but you can't use the ramp until after 5 p.m. And if somebody's there that's launching the next day, you have to wait for them. Again, you can't affect people launching the next day. So if you pull up at like 4:55 and there's three rigs there, people launching the next day, you just need to relax and let them do their thing. And when they're done that evening, whatever it is, 8 p.m., you can then slide your boats down the ramp. But you are not supposed to affect other people. The earliest you can use the ramp is 5 p.m. You can launch that evening. Usually you're launched by like 7, 8 p.m. And you can camp at a spot that's assigned to you by the Forest Service. Usually it's Gardell's, but there's other places you can camp. And then the next morning, get up and finish your deadhead and get to Indian. Some key rules are you can't stop at sites. You can't stop at hot springs. You can't stop and do common hikes. You can pull over for lunch, but it can't be like at a place a group launching from boundary is going to use. So the key rule here is, and you can't stop below Pistol and have a party, which is a thing that has happened in the past. You can't go down there and just get drunk and like hang out. You got to like keep moving on to Indian Creek. And there's no time constraint when you arrive at Indian Creek, but you want somebody there at 4:30 to be part of the camp round robin. So I would say, like, to quickly sum up the deadheading rules, you can launch the day before 9 p.m. or 2 days before after 5 p.m. But whatever you do on the river, at the boat ramp, whatever it is, you can't affect other people's experience who are actually launching that day. So hopefully that answers that question. Okay, here we go. Willie Bum Bum comment. Brushes with death happen on the river. Yeah. Every river trip, regardless of class or duration, is a spiritual experience, some more so than others. Yeah. there's close calls happened, or like, yeah, I mean, there's getting stuck sideways in the mid shoot, which I probably wouldn't call a close call. And there's like flipping in the mid shoot and being under your raft through there. That's a close call. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Ryobi compact workshop blower. Any idea if there's an adapter for the Ryobi compact workshop blower? What's, first of all, let's Google what a Ryobi compact workshop blower is. This. Yeah, I mean, it's just a blower. Like, yeah, this thing. Yeah, there's a, I mean, I sell them. I'm the only person that sells these things. So if you go to my little shop, and this is actually a great place for me to have a commercial. Thank you for the question. If you go to blower adapters, which is the most common thing we sell because they're amazing, there's one right here. It's $28.95 plus shipping, and it's awesome. And there's even photos of it for this specific blower, that the Ryobi P755. Fits great. Yeah, just buy this. It's going to work great. Highly recommended. Okay. Wing boats. I'm considering buying a new raft. Wing is one of my top choices. I have not seen any recent updates on Gear Garage regarding wing boats. I see them being used on Lower Rogue. Could you please tell me how they're holding up after owning them for 5 or 6 years, fading, wear and tear, etc.? Would you still buy one? Yeah, I mean, they're great boats. We've been using them. They're more durable than anything I've ever used. There's an occasional problem, like a handle breaks, or we've had some problems with thwarts. The thwarts kind of, the attachment kind of sucks. The old attachment, hopefully they have a new attachment that I just help them design that's better. My logos are coming off. So if you get it logoed, don't expect it to stay on. Looks kind of, I'm annoyed that my logos are coming off. But yeah, durability wise, they're probably better than anything else. My general advice for Wing is they make a really great boat. And first of all, like, I'm super proud of the designs, because I've done most of the designs. Wing rafts. So I can tell you that the rafts, most of these, and the cataract too, and the IK, I designed the inflatable kayak and the cataract, but the rafts, most of these, the 14.6 Williamson, the 16 Surge, 18 foot Georgie, I designed based on Avon designs, which I think are the best boat designs ever. And so I'm pretty proud of the boats, and you'll notice most of the photos on here are my boats. That's one of my boats, before the logos all came undone. But the designs are really good, and they make a high quality product, except for like the logos and the thwart attachments that keep breaking on me. There's generally a super high quality product, really nice fabric. But my complaints with them, which you might want to think about if you're a private boater, is like, there's not like a, they need somebody there who knows about rafting, and they make rafts for rafters, but there's nobody there at Wing that really knows rafting. And so they make mistakes. Like, the handles on this boat in this photo stick out too far. You can put a kid could put a leg in those handles. I'm not very stoked on those handles. They just didn't know. They just made them big one day. And like, the boats I bought before were smaller. They were perfect. And they made them bigger this year for some reason, where somebody who knew about rafting would be like, oh yeah, you shouldn't put handles like that on there. And like, year to year, there's consistency issues. Like, some of my boats are fading out of different color. So they're not perfect, but they're really good. Yeah, they're expensive. And so I think if you're gonna pay whatever they are, it's like $10,000 for some of their boats now. I personally think for that price, they should have more expertise in terms of rafting, and they shouldn't make some of the mistakes they've made with my boats, at least. And so would I pay $10,000 for a Wing right now? Probably not. When I bought mine, they cost a little bit less. If I had to buy new boats right now, oh man, with the annoyances, like, if they were perfect, I'd pay the money. But because I've had a bunch of annoyances with them, I probably wouldn't buy them now. But yeah, it's hard to say. Wing has started using two pieces of material instead of one holding the D-rings. yeah, that's cool. Yeah, good for them now. But like when I bought them, and they're not very good at warranting them. Like they got kind of annoyed that I asked, and I was like, no, you're gonna warranty these. But like they should warranty all of them, and it's frustrating. And it's really a bummer when you're guiding a wing raft above a class 5 rapid like Greenwall, and a thwart blows out. Like that's frustrating. So you can imagine how frustrated I am. I wish they'd started with that. And Willie, who's guided some trips, they mostly be coming off the blue boats. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing, but they're coming off some of our gear boats, and you know, our wing jimbos are inflatable kayaks. You haven't seen them pumped up, but it's embarrassing. It looks really bad. Let's see, Jay. What's up, Jay? Brushes with death has ended many a whitewater career. Yeah. I mean, I had a real bad experience kayaking in California like 20 years ago that I almost got out of. I mean, it changed my trajectory in kayaking completely, for sure. I feel the best thing to do is brush it off, get back on the horse, analyze and learn. Yeah, I mean, but honestly, like, it's a real, also, the best thing to do might be, like, get into hiking. Like, if you have a brush with death, you may have another one. Like, or, like, just lower what you do. Like, if you're pushing it all the time, we know those people out there. They're just, like, they're new to the sport. They're 2 years in. All of a sudden, they're doing class 5, and they're going off all these huge things. And then 2 months later, you never hear from them again. And so it's because people like boating and like to push. But they don't, they like love pushing it, but they don't love like just floating and doing the class 3-4. And so I would, in general, I would say like, if you love boating for boating, whether it's class 1 or class 5, that's the right, that's a good, you'll stick with boating for a long time. But if you keep having these near death experience, cause you're pushing the limits, maybe you should get into something else. Like, I don't know, Legos or video games or something. But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, if you want to keep boating, you got to brush it off, but you don't have to keep boating. There's other things to do that are less risky. Okay, so the answer is, would I still buy one? Man, I don't know. I don't need to buy boats right now, and it would be, if I had to buy boats right now, I'm not sure what I'd do. I like the boats. They look good, except the logo's coming off, and two of them fading in a different, like two of the boats are fading to a different blue than the rest of them. So it looks weird. And they couldn't, year to year, the logos weren't consistent. Like sometimes they tilted them different. I have a bunch of weird complaints, but in terms of durability and just being awesome boats, they're really nice. Yep. Okay. I love your channel and all you put into it. Thank you. How do I find more people in the Rogue Valley that want to go rafting? I don't know. Go to put in. I get asked this a lot. How do I make boating friends? I think let me read this in a minute. I'll keep reading it and I'll answer. Is there like a digital bulletin board or something? There's Facebook. Facebook has groups. I think there's a few down there. They're kind of kayaking oriented, but you can also make one. You can make a Facebook group. I don't think there's a digital bulletin board though. This is my second year rafting and want to venture into class 3, maybe 4. Looking for people to hang out with. What's the best way to find the local community? Thank you. So I'm going to give you my advice. I've done a whole video on this. You can probably Google it. How do I make boating friends? Step one is don't be annoying. Like just be like when you go boating, like be an asset. So like have some training, bring a first aid kit, bring a pin kit, have training in first aid and rescue. Lift things. Like don't just back your trailer down and expect people to come and like put your boat in the water for you. And same thing at takeout, like lift things, like be helpful. Maybe bring some snacks to give to people. Don't be that person who's just like a liability. And I feel like a lot of people don't make boating friends because they're selfish and or they're a liability. Like they're unwilling to help. They're not helping. They're not a net benefit to the trip. And so they go on the trip because I do this all the time. Like I go kayaking, I meet a new person. And if they showed up late and they're taking forever to get ready and they're chit chatty, which is fine, but there's a point to it. And on the river, they're just not like looking out for other people. I will not go with them again. Like, and they're like, why can't I make boating friends? And I can't tell them like, hey, by the way, the reason I'm not going to boat with you again is because you're selfish and you're like a liability. Like, I'm not going to tell them that, but it's in my head. And I just, when I hear so-and-so is going boating, I'm like, I'm not going. Like, I don't want to go. And so, yeah, that just be a nice person, be helpful, be an asset. That's, and then go to the put in and hang out, and maybe you'll meet somebody. Hopefully, it helps. I don't have a better answer other than like some sort of Facebook group. But yeah, like, just be cool. Yeah. I went Willie Bum Bum and I went boating. I didn't know what to expect. And I'm like, yeah, Willie Bum Bum, you're just like a good boater and you're looking out for me and you're like happy. Help me carry my boat down. But I go boating with other people like Willie Bum Bum that I meet. And I'm just like, no, I'm done. Peace out. Like, that was dumb. I guess my answer would be like, be more like Willie Bum Bum. Okay. All right. Raffle question. Hey, love the show. Thanks. So many nice comments. Thank you. I've been boating for a long time, but always in a cat. I just bought my first raft, an Air 156R for hauling gear. Sick boat. Honestly, like, that's great choice. I love the 156R. I've read it's better to keep weight off the floor for both performance and longevity of the floor. That makes sense. Yeah, because if it's on the floor and you go over rocks, it's just going to push against rocks. So, you don't have to keep this weight off the floor, but I think it helps. And if it's shallow water, like low water, middle fork, I want my floor to be able to conform to the rocks. Like if it's low water, I like deflate my floor a bit and I don't want things on it. I want the floor to like be able to just pontoon a rock basically. So something like this mesh beaver, I don't see it. If you sent it, I'm sorry, I missed out on the video, on the photo. So do I need to protect the floor or just send it as the kids say? I don't know. If you're doing like, I worked for years in the Tuolumne River where we just rigged bags of the floor and it was fine. We just sent it there. But, you know, you go to some rivers and they like have to have beaver tails with stuff above the floor or like everybody's like, we're all going to die. There's no beaver tails. On Illinois trips, I don't run a beaver tail. I just rig the bags of the floor. But if you're rigging hard things of the floor, that's the problem. So like if it's soft things, I don't think it's a big deal. But if you're rigging like your metal Johnny partner or your stove to the floor, I would worry about that because if a rock hits it, it could put a hole in the floor. So I would say somewhere in between protecting the floor and sending it. I would say sometimes like low water, protect the floor. High water, doesn't really matter that much. Medium water, I don't know. Okay. And those mesh beaver tails, we use them on our deadheads. We have these mesh beaver tails. I don't have the photo. We just use them on the deadheads on the paddle boats. You just to bring things above the floor. And then when we're done with the deadhead, we just put them in a ball and shove them somewhere out of the way. We don't need them anymore. So mesh beaver tails are sweet. All right. Comments. Got to do a day trip test run to make sure you can spend multiple days with someone. Yeah. Get to know somebody on a day trip, day run before doing multi-day. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I think Jay, this person, if I remember right, said they were in, Southern Oregon. OWA is more of a Portland, Oregon Whitewater Association, more of a Portland group. And Washington Recreational River Runners, the WER, is a more of a Washington group. If you're in those areas, it's a great place to make friends, I would say. But since he said he was near the Rogue, I don't think there's a group down there. There used to be the Northwest Rafting Association, I think the NWA, used to have a chapter down there, but I think it died off. But yeah, I mean, whitewater clubs are the best way to go. Okay, here we go. Massive slide dries up river, big lake forming in BC. Okay, so I got this link. I think this is the last question. So this is more just commentary now than anything else. For those of you that haven't seen it, I'm pretty sure everybody's seen this. I've seen a bazillion posts and emails, but let's just, I've seen a live, you've probably seen it. So if you've seen this and you don't care, then I don't know, you're done watching the show. This is it. This is, unless somebody else has questions.
Hating a flood sooner or later. We don't know how big it's going
to
be.
On the Silcatee Nation, they're bracing for what's to come.
Time I've actually seen it. That slid down. I could not figure it out from other things. It looks like this slid and blocked the river. And this is the lake behind it. It's hard to tell which side it is. Anyway,
wow. Landslide dammed the Chilcotin River in BC's Caribou.
Also worried about the people that might have property further down in the area.
Evacuation orders span 107 square kilometers. There are ecological concerns
and
fears for human safety.
Interior yeah, Health like has relocated patients from Lillooet to an alternative location as a precautionary measure.
Current modeling indicates the water may go over the top instead of bursting through in a sudden rush. If it were to burst, the Chilcotin River would rise well above peak spring runoff. The Fraser River would be below typical spring peak water levels.
From what I heard last night, it's about a kilometer long and about 600 meters wide and still 30 meters high. The water is building up behind it.
Advisories have been issued urging people to stay away from the Chilcotin and Fraser Riverbanks. Not everyone is adhering. On the Fraser River north of Hope, one group continues to fish for sturgeon.
It's not going to come in 10 minutes. So if something happens there that's catastrophic, we're going to hear about it. And it's going to give us
the last question, comment. That's pretty cool. But, well, thanks everybody for watching. Thanks for supporting the show. I appreciate all you that are members and all of you that leave comments. And yeah, I enjoy doing these shows. I'm glad to be back. I should be doing one next Tuesday if we get questions. Even if we don't get questions, I'll find something to talk about. But like usual, thanks for watching. And we'll see you all next week.